singing songs like Smile and All.
And the gain go up and the volume go down?
Your name and all these things. It really, that's where my whole sermon is really going.
I'm at 75%. I'm never that
high. Three out of the things like, okay. Don't worry. Just
where is it? Where is that? Yeah. That's
he's done all the way down. It's really not even about faith. Yeah. It's about submitting our lives to Him. And I just, I promised Amy and I did in my puddle earlier in the week, I needed to do these types of songs for Sunday. And she and Robert were really a puddle during the week either, but, you know, through God, God uses all of us to really work together, even unbeknownst to us, is really loud up here in the ringing. Uses all of us to do His work. And we don't even know how He does it, but He does it, and it's just awesome. So hopefully, you guys, as you bear with my sermon, you realize how much you enjoy worship in there, too. So the plague starts in the middle of Exodus chapter 7, but I'm going to go backwards just a little bit to chapter 5, a few verses. Exodus 5, 1 through 5. And this is the first time where Moses and Aaron Later Moses and Aaron went in and said to Pharaoh, "This is what Yahweh, the God of Israel, says. Let my people go, so that they may hold a festival for me in the wilderness." But Pharaoh responded, "Who is Yahweh that I should obey Him by letting Israel go? I do not know anything about Yahweh. And besides, I will not let Israel go." Then they answered, "The God of the Hebrews has met with us. Please let us go on a three-day trip into the wilderness so that we may sacrifice to Yahweh our God, or else He may strike us with plague or sword." The king of Egypt said to them, "Moses and Aaron, why are you causing the people to neglect their work? Get to your work." Pharaoh also said, "Look, the people of the land are so numerous, you would stop them from working. Who is Yahweh that I should obey?" That was the question that Pharaoh asked that day. The Egyptians, depending on where you look, they worshiped hundreds of gods, if not thousands. Apparently they had like national gods and state gods and local gods, and you probably had your own personal gods. You know? But they had lots of gods, lots of little g gods. So it was no surprise to Pharaoh that the Hebrews had a god too. Great. What do you want me to do about it?
So weird.
Yeah.
Of course they did. Everybody had a
god. I was trying to see if
non-Christian, God does not want any of us to perish. And guess what? God was pursuing Pharaoh. God did not want Pharaoh to perish. Because let's think about this. Alright? In the scheme of God having sent 10 plagues that finally convinced Pharaoh to let the Israelites go, God didn't need Pharaoh to let the Israelites go. God could have just said, boom, Egypt's no longer a Hebrew nation, you're free. Just walk on out. God's got the power to do that. But God chose to work through Pharaoh. God was giving Pharaoh and the Egyptian nation what I'll call a transforming opportunity to be a part of his story. Now, they still got to be a part of his story, but just not in a way where they were obedient. They didn't submit to him fully. But Pharaoh had a question. And God said, well, let me answer that for you. Who is Yahweh that I should obey? God shows up. God didn't show up. God was there. God shows up there and he begins to show Pharaoh exactly who he was and who he is. He is I Am. He's the God that doesn't answer to any gods. It doesn't matter how many little g gods that you've got, our God doesn't answer to any. It doesn't matter how many little g gods you've got, our God doesn't answer to any. And he certainly didn't answer to Pharaoh. So, the first plague, water turned into blood. Now, I was personally, my personality, I like, you guys know me, I always like to have a joke or a funny story or something. It's flames. I came up with nothing. But there's lots of jokes and stuff out there, but there's nothing I can sit here and talk about. Let's go to that. But it's flames. There's not a whole lot of fun laughing moments about flames. So, we'll jump into Exodus 7. We'll start at verse 14, the first plague. Water turns to blood. Then the Lord said to Moses, Pharaoh's heart is hard. He refuses to let the people go. Go to Pharaoh in the morning. When you see him walking out to the water, stand ready to meet him by the bank of the Nile. Take in your hand a staff that turned into a snake. Tell him, Yahweh, the God of the Hebrews, has sent me to tell you, let my people go, so that they may worship me in the wilderness. But so far you have not listened. This is what Yahweh says. Here's how you will know that I am Yahweh. Watch. I will strike the water in the Nile with a staff in my hand, and it will turn to blood. The fish in the Nile will die. The river will stink, and the Egyptians will be unable to drink water from it. So the Lord said to Moses, tell Aaron, take your staff, stretch out your hand over the waters of Egypt, over the rivers, canals, ponds, and all their water reservoirs, and they will become blood. There will be blood throughout the land of Egypt, even in wooden and stone containers. Moses and Aaron did just as the Lord had commanded in the sight of Pharaoh and his officials. That's important. He didn't hide anything. They weren't trying to cover up anything right in sight. He raised the staff and struck the water in the Nile, and all the water in the Nile was turned to blood. The fish in the Nile died, and the river smelled so bad the Egyptians did not drink water from it. There was blood throughout the land of Egypt. But the magicians of Egypt did the same thing by their old practices. So Pharaoh's heart hardened, and he would not listen to them as the Lord had said. Pharaoh turned around, went into his palace, and didn't even take this. All the Egyptians dug around the Nile for water to drink, because they did not drink the water from the river. 7 days passed after the Lord struck the Nile. So, it's very likely that the whole reason that the Pharaoh was down at the Nile that morning was to offer sacrifice to the God of the Nile. The Nile there's a lot of discussion if you read through different commentaries and different resources about whether the water was turned to natural blood. Some argue that it was only silver. And the way I can imagine it's kind of like the King of the Red River. Some people argue that it was actual literal blood. And still others argue that it was like a red algae. And having studied this for an entire week and a half, I can tell you with 100% certainty, I don't know. But what I do know is I have faith, 100% faith, that if God wanted to turn that water into blood, he could absolutely do it. No question, no doubt. But the flip side of that is there are passages in the Bible that seem to refer to a figurative blood, like the moon turning to blood and things of that nature. So I don't have an answer for it. But I think the good news is I don't think the substance really matters as much. It catches the word blood. That's kind of like, you know, it's like that headline. It catches your attention. You know, wait a second, water is supposed to be blood. All right? It catches your attention. But I think it could have been motor oil or orange juice. But the truth is, it happened just as God said it would. It happened. You know, rivers have silt in them all the time. They don't seem to make the river stink. It doesn't seem to kill fish or make it undrinkable. You know, if the water did turn to blood, yeah, I can see it would kill all the fish and it would stink. It would be awful. Nobody would anybody want to drink that mess. But when I look at it, nobody seems panicked. You know, you read the story, you read so many stories about ancient societies, and when things happen, people freaked out, right? If you don't see anybody in this state of panic, this, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? And so I kind of lean towards the out. I'm going to explain why. Because I think that the Egyptians probably are like, we've seen this before, right? Algae blooms happen. And apparently it's a fairly common occurrence within the Nile itself. So they could explain it away and not have to admit to Moses and Aaron or anybody else for that matter that it was Yahweh, that it was I Am, that it was Big G God. But to do that, they have to ignore a few things. This was instantaneous transformation of the water. You know, an algae bloom it can happen quickly, but it's not instantaneous. And I think most of us here in North Texas, we always talk about, like, I think it's in the fall, you talk about how, well, the lake must have turned over because the tap water stinks and it tastes funny, right? But it's not, we don't wake up one day and all of a sudden the water stinks and tastes funny. It kind of grows over a period of days, right? It's the same way that us algae bloom. So they have to ignore that algae. Right? They have to ignore it. The second thing is, this affected all of the water. Okay? So it's practical to think that, okay, it affected the Nile, it affected the irrigation canals that are affected to the Nile, right? They're connected. Okay? But there's all kinds of lakes and ponds along the Nile that they fill up. When the Nile floods, they get filled up. And they'll dry out throughout the course of the year. But those were affected too. So how did the algae get there? And then all the water that they had stored in jugs and pots in their households that would have had lids on. Algae doesn't grow in the dark, folks. Now, you can still argue that it was blood. I get that. But either way, whether it's blood or algae, how did he get those pots? There's no connection. This would have been water that they made throughout. Early that morning. This is water that they, but it was a desert, right? They prepared for times of no water. It affected all of them. Now, the magicians, who, if you go back and look at Egyptian society, those magicians were priests. Okay? They were revered. They were priests to the gods that they served. They were able to recreate. Albeit on a much smaller scale. But for Pharaoh, it was enough proof that he really wasn't dealing with a god that he felt was more powerful than his explain it, you know, if you go to Alvin's take on this, he was able to explain it to himself. It's just, a natural occurrence. You know, again, he's ignoring a lot of other information, but it just happens. But worst case, it's a little G God. His little G God can handle it too. And we're just like Pharaoh. God shows up. He does these miraculous things in our life. God's pursuing us, and he speaks to us through these things that we're kind of used to. But those things happen a little bit differently than they normally would. And sometimes he takes away things from us that make us thrive, like the Nile allowed the nation of Egypt to thrive. Sometimes he uses things that we've seen before to make us acknowledge who he is. And just like this plague, he often allows things to linger on. When we read this, we're not given when the water cleared up. We don't know. But it's likely that this was a lingering problem for days. If nothing else, you got lots of dead fish in the water that just don't go away. But we do know it wasn't taken away immediately. The Pharaoh, just like we are sometimes, he wasn't moving from this. He almost just ignored it and overdone it. Now, second plague was frogs. Now, this one got Pharaoh's attention. He just wished he could croak. Yeah, I didn't get you with the bad joke. Just like this happened, the second plague is frogs. So if you turn to Exodus chapter 8, verse 1. Then the Lord says to Moses, "Go into Pharaoh and tell him, 'This is what Yahweh says. Let my people go so that they may worship you. But if you refuse to let them go, then I will plague all your territory with frogs. The Nile will swarm with frogs. They will come up and go into your palace, into your bedroom, and on your bed, into the houses of your officials, and your people, and into your ovens and kneading bowls. The frogs will come up on you, your people, and all of your officials.' Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Tell Aaron, stretch out your hand with your staff over the rivers, canals, and ponds, and cause the frogs to come up onto the land.' When Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, the frogs came up and covered the land of Egypt. But the magicians did the same thing by their occult practices and brought frogs up onto the land of Egypt. Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron and said, 'Ask Yahweh to remove the frogs from me and my people.'" So God's got his attention at least this time. "Then I will let the people go and they can sacrifice to God." Moses said to Pharaoh, "You make the choice rather than me. When should I ask on behalf of you, your officials, and your people that the frogs be taken away from you and your houses and remain on the Nile?" "Tomorrow," he answered. Moses replied, "As you have said, so you may know there is no one like Yahweh our God. The frogs will go away from you, your houses, your officials, and your people. The frogs will remain only in the Nile." After Moses and Aaron went out from the Pharaoh, Moses cried out to the Lord for help concerning the frogs that he had brought to the Pharaoh. The Lord did as Moses had said. The frogs in the houses, the courtyards, and the fields died. They piled them in countless heaps, and there was a terrible odor in the land. But when Pharaoh saw there was relief, he hardened his heart. He would not listen to them, as the Lord had said. So, the Egyptians were one of the most advanced cultures, advanced societies, and hygiene was really important to them. So, having endured the plague of the blood and the Nile, and possibly still enduring, now they're dealing with the land being covered in frogs. So, their problems just got worse. I mean, have you ever picked up a frog? No. Tina's like shaking her head. Get the peas in your hand. Just like covered in this snot like mucus. At least the good ones, right? They're just gross. back and look at some of the hieroglyphic drawings and paintings that you see in tombs, the straw god is breathing life into the person who died to give them life in Africa. And the Egyptians wanted that. They wanted to be able to live well in this life, but also to live well in the next life, live life to its fullest. But guess what? Hopefully this is no surprise to you guys, but frogs don't give life. And the truth of the matter is, only God, only Yahweh. So, you know, we go back to this whole discussion about the algae, right? So there's some scientists that argue that because of the algae in the water, all the frogs left. Right? They're like, this is disgusting. They left, or it caused all their food sources to die. Which, that doesn't make sense to me. Because frogs eat bugs. And I can only imagine how many bugs there were in the mouth of all those dead fish. Right? So, that doesn't make any sense to me. Plus, it ignores, I think, the sheer quantity of frogs. For frogs to be everywhere, like they're described, there weren't that many in the Nile. Right? The Nile is not that big relative to the land space. And for frogs to be everywhere, we have to ignore that fact. For frogs, I think that it was just frogs from the Nile, because of the fact. The frogs left the Nile because God told them. And for us, one of the important things for us to look at is it doesn't matter what the plague is going on in the Egyptians' life or in our lives, we need to pay attention to God's time and God's hand in this. Alright? Because we can just explain it away. But we have to look at God's time. And for Pharaoh, since the frogs were everywhere, he couldn't just retreat into his palace like he did when the Nile turned to blood. He had to deal with these frogs somehow. And just like with the water turning to blood, the magicians, the priests, were able to recreate this act of God. Alright? Which would have made the problem worse.
Yeah.
Or how could you have even told, been able to tell the difference between their frogs and all the other frogs over there? But the curious thing to me, and the Bible doesn't speak to this because I think it's one of those obvious things. Why weren't the magicians trying to get rid of the frogs?
Yeah.
Or get rid of the blood? Well, I think they were, but they couldn't. Because they were powerless against God and his young. So, nevertheless, the frogs were so bad that Pharaoh wanted them gone. He was being forced to acknowledge God's power. And so he told Moses to ask Yahweh to remove the frogs. And Moses says, no problem. When do you want them? Right? I think it's one of the greatest questions of all time. Right? I'll be glad to get rid of this. Anytime you want. Pharaoh says tomorrow. And what I've done, nobody said, nobody knows why he said tomorrow. Right? But tomorrow. Okay. But by allowing Pharaoh to choose when the frogs would leave, the only thing left was that if he said it tomorrow, or he said next week, or he said it right now, he had to, at least, in some form or fashion, acknowledge that maybe this isn't just coincidence. Maybe there's something bigger at play here. It couldn't be attributed to, well, the frogs just died, you know. It couldn't be just attributed to anybody other than God. And it also would force you to understand there's no other God like God. And so the next day, well, let's step back for a second. Moses says, you got it. Right? What a giant leap of faith. Because up until this point, we don't see Moses doing anything that God hadn't already told him to do. Right? You got it. And then, I think rightfully so, Moses leaves and says, please God, we have to get rid of these frogs tomorrow. And God comes through for him. And I think in the same way for us. If we're working in God's will, and we're not sure what to do in a situation, got to clean it up. But as the cleanup took place, as things got better, Pharaoh changed his mind. And he chose to disregard the mercy that God had on him by taking away the plague and further hardened his heart. And you know what? For us, God allows hardship into our lives. And when we experience it, we often promise to submit to Him and do what He asks, just like Pharaoh. But after the hardship remits, after things start to get cleaned up, we turn back to the way we were. We're not changed. Even though God has clearly shown Himself to us, we're moved, but we don't allow ourselves to fully submit to God's authority. The third plague, the gnats. Exodus 8:16. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Tell Aaron, stretch out your staff and strike the dust of the earth, and it will become gnats throughout the land." And they did this. Aaron stretched out his hand with the staff, and when he struck the dust of the earth, gnats were on man and beast. All the dust of the earth became gnats throughout the land of Egypt. The magicians tried to reduce gnats using their occult practices, but they could not. The gnats remained on man and beast. This is the finger of God, the magician said to Pharaoh. But Pharaoh's heart hardened, and he would not listen to them, as the Lord had said. This may be the worst one so far. Anybody ever walked through a cloud of gnats? Right? You just can't get it out of the back of your throat. It'd be horrible. But one big difference between this plague and the first two was this plague was not announced. There was no warning given like the other plagues had. And interestingly, the Hebrew word that many translations interpret into the word gnat is not really very clear. So I think some translations say lice. But even when you read through the commentaries, they say it could have been a number of things. It could have been mosquitoes. Oh my gosh. Sand fleas. Or any other kind of small insect or pest or incredibly annoying little vermin. And then two, it says they struck the dust. Now, again, if God wants to make the dust into gnats, absolutely 100% has the power. But is that just a figurative thing? Could likely be that as well. Again, I don't think it really, if you focus on that, I think you're missing the bigger part of the story. But let's talk about where they are again. Have we mentioned that Egypt's in a desert? It's dry. There's a lot of dust. That's a lot of gnats. Ugh. Right. And we're not told how long this lasted. There's no reference. But I don't know that matters. How long it lasted. But it probably lasted some love for it to become incredibly annoying and bothersome. And it really doesn't matter whether it's gnats or mosquitoes or lice or sand fleas or anything else. Life is not unpleasant in this point in time in the nation. But what really sets this plague apart, in my mind, is that his magicians, Pharaoh's magicians, his priests, could not recreate this. there's a part of me, and this is Baxter speaking, finally from the Bible, but God allowed them to recreate the other legs, the other miracles. I think there's an element in here that God could have allowed them to recreate the miracles, but he prevented them from making the miracles. Despite all this evidence, Pharaoh still refused to submit to God's authority. He just couldn't allow himself to submit to God. He couldn't give up that control. Control he really didn't have any. He just thought he had. And just like Pharaoh, that sounds awful familiar. We allow all the stubbornness that we have to get in our way. Get in the way of our relationship with God. We keep our stubbornness from allowing us to be obedient to Him. And we allow our stubbornness to make us miss out on His blessing. And so, what about me? What about you? What about us? So, through these first three plagues, Pharaoh was certainly beginning to know Yahweh. Any room for him not being forced, at least, to acknowledge that something bigger is going on. And through these first three plagues, he had experienced great hardship and inconvenience, but he hadn't been brought down to his knees in submission. In fact, his disobedience of God had caused the entire nation, including the nation of Israel, including the Hebrews, suffer greatly. No one was immune from this. He had seen God act, and he even had the people he trusted telling him that this wasn't magic, that this wasn't a coincidence. But as Pharaoh, he didn't do well with being told what to do. Especially by someone he felt was inferior. And it really doesn't matter whether that person he felt was Moses, the Hebrew, telling him what to do, or even God. Pharaoh didn't feel inferior to either one. And I think that's where the biggest parallel between us and Pharaoh lies. We are the Pharaoh of our lives, of our kingdoms. And no matter what the consequences are, we are not going to be told what to do. And I've raised my hand high, maybe raised both hands. I'm such a bad offender of this. And you can tell you this. I don't like people. I got my ideas about how things should work, how things should happen. We make our own decisions. No matter the consequences, no matter the cost, no matter the effect on those around us, it may be the wrong decision, but it's mine. Why we like that better than having made the right decision, I don't know. I guess we'll just say it's the sinful nature that we have that affects us on us. But it's just so. There's no. It makes no sense. redeem us. He's trying to show us that no matter what we're pursuing, unless it's Jesus, we're chasing the wrong things. John 14:6, Jesus told him, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. We need to pursue Jesus. And I just want to encourage all of us here, myself included, if you've never submitted your life to Jesus, today is the day. But if you have surrendered to Jesus, but you're trying to be Pharaoh in your life, if you're trying to maintain your own kingdom, today's the day to give up. Submit your life. Surrender all that's in the door to the one who can bring you peace. The one who can bring you rest. The one that ultimately is trying to save us from eternal death and hell. That's a phrase I debated on whether to include what I was saying today. That's tough. That's what God is saving us from. We don't like to talk about hell, but that's exactly what we deserve. And God is trying so hard to redeem us. He's trying to rescue us through the grace of Jesus. And just like Pharaoh did, we've got a choice. What choice are you? Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we just thank you for your mercy. Thank you for allowing us to be here today. Thank you for pursuing us. That despite where we might be in our relationship with you, Lord, it is not your will that we should perish. Lord, we often face trials and difficulties in life. Sometimes those are consequence of our actions. Sometimes those are the consequence of others' actions, God. Nevertheless, Lord, through all that, you're calling for us to submit to you, to give our lives over to you. Lord, I pray that we will continue this journey with you, that for those that have not accepted with your grace and mercy through your Son Jesus Christ. Do so. And Lord, for those of us that have, we still try so hard to maintain our own kingdoms, that we would fall for our knees instead of being forced to our knees. We would fall for our knees and in our lives over to you. We give those things up in our lives that we just hold on to. And we would quit worshiping God, and only worship you, the one and only true God. I am. Lord, I pray that your Spirit is moving our hearts, moving our minds, moving our lives, and those around us in ways that, Lord, for us to disregard, we would have to deliberately do so. I ask it in that way, God, because my prayer is that we would disregard, that we would see it for what it is. It's you, it's your love for us, it's your pursuit of us, it's your call. faith and pray our church will be a light for the weak through your people. You don't need us.